This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. It's our Race for the First series, where each Monday we introduce you to a candidate running for New Hampshire's first congressional district. With a wide open seat in a swing district, many have jumped in. At last count, 2 Republicans and 8 Democrats. Let's make you part of this series, too, especially if you live in the first district. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Or use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or call 1-800-892-6477. You can also watch our interview today on Facebook Live. Our candidate is Terrence O'Rourke. He's an Army combat veteran who served in Iraq. He's also a lawyer serving in various roles, including his current role as Rochester City Attorney. And Mr. O'Rourke, welcome. It's really nice to meet you.
Thank you. Good morning.
So it's a crowded field of Democrats, as I just said. So give us the elevator pitch, Mr. O'Rourke, in about 30 seconds. We're going from the first floor up to the sixth floor here at NHPR. Why should first district voters choose you?
Well, I think first district voters should choose me because, first of all, I have the experience at the local government level, county level, state level, federal level. So I know government. I know how it works. And more to the point, I know how to get results within government. And right now what we need, particularly in the Democratic Party, is people who are willing to fight. And that's what I do. I fight and I win.
You talked about your government experience, and some people would say, great, he understands how all the levers of government work. But we've been in an era where government experience is not always admired. People say, I want an outsider. So how are you an outsider?
Well, I'm an outsider because I'm outside the political establishment. I'm not involved with the Concord establishment, and I'm certainly not involved in the D.C. establishment. So again, I'm not the candidate that they were looking for, but I believe I'm the candidate the voters are looking for.
So as I said in the introduction, you're a military veteran. I'd like to ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
About military policy, veterans issues, given your experience in this area. First off, top of the news today, a suspected chemical weapons attack on a Damascus suburb in Syria over the weekend has President Trump warning there will be, quote, a big price to pay for the attack. Lots of people talking about this morning. What do you think, Mr. O'Rourke, the American response should be?
Right now, America can't be a fair broker in the Middle East. We got involved in Iraq over 15 years ago based on lies. And we're still there now based on the original lie, the original sin. The only thing America should do right now, quite frankly, is get out. And I don't see where our presence there is being helpful. So what I would like to see is America get out. I'd like to see the Arab League step forward. I'd like to see the UN step up, because those are the people who should be involved in this. America, and this has been said many times by many people, but it's true, we're not the world police. And at the same time, we have been a bull in a china shop in the Middle East. What's happening in Syria was caused by what happened in Iraq. So we're not going to make things better by being there.
It's interesting to hear you say that again, given your experience there. How did your experience doing combat in Iraq shape that view that you just shared with us?
Well, there's the human tragedy that you see, the deaths, bodily injuries. But then what you also see is the scars on the landscape. And what I mean by that is we destroyed the infrastructure of this country. They couldn't keep their lights on. They're hard to keep fresh water going into the cities. Sewers not being taken care of. The things we basically take for granted.
Absolutely.
As Americans, or not just as Americans, but as Westerners. And they had that in Iraq. Iraq was not an undeveloped country. It was a developed country, certainly a poor country, but a developed country. And we destroyed that, along with killing, by conservative estimates, over 1 million people. That's almost killing the entire state of New Hampshire. So, again, seeing that up close and personal, it's one thing to read about it, but to actually see it, and then when you have interpreters, and I was embedded with the Iraqi army, so I knew these folks and became friends with them, and I knew what we had done to them and their families. And at that point, I knew that the war was wrong to begin with, but now it's even more so, like, why are we still there? Why were we ever there?
So a big part of your campaign platform is to get the U.S. out of Iraq and Afghanistan. So you're extending that feeling to Syria, Mr. O'Rourke.
I am. And again, these authorizations for use of military force in Iraq and Afghanistan, they've been used to get us into places all over the world, including Syria. We have no authorization to be in Syria right now. We haven't declared war on Syria. We haven't declared war on the Assad regime yet. There our soldiers are today, right now. Why are they there? What's the authorization they're using? Well, they're using the authorization for the war in Iraq to be there. Just like our soldiers who were killed in Niger a few months ago, that was the authorization for the war in Afghanistan. So by deauthorizing those two authorizations, you not only end the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, you end these satellite wars that keep popping up seemingly every day around the world.
So it sounds like you're saying, as a member of Congress, if you were to win the nomination and win the whole race, that you would be a voice for stronger congressional oversight of these military authorizations.
I think I go a little step further. We haven't declared war since World War II, yet we've been at war since World War II. I think Congress needs to reclaim its constitutional job, and that's to declare war. And when you declare war, it changes everything. You start going under wartime footing in the economy. The entire country gears up and goes to war. Well, we don't have that now because we're not declaring war. And what we have is the military's at war while everyone else in America goes on with their lives. At any given time, only 1% of the population is serving in the United States military. So by declaring war, you have to have something we agree on. You have to have consensus. It's the American people saying there's a point to this war, there's a goal to be met, and we're going to declare war in this country to meet these goals. And if you can't do that, if you can't get that threshold to declare war, that's the first sign you shouldn't be doing it.
One more question on this, and then there's a bunch of other stuff we should talk about. Yeah. As a congressional candidate for you, how do you feel about the concern that once the U.S. leaves, because as I said, you've called for ending military involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, security gets even worse, groups like ISIS come to fill in the vacuum. This is the narrative that we hear about Iraq, for example, sometimes.
Well, then it never ends. That's how wars become endless, is because you're always saying, well, what if, what if, what if? Well, something has to end. The United States has to get out of those countries. And yes, there are going to be tragedies. There's going to be humanitarian tragedies, but there are other organizations out there. Right here in America, USAID can be involved. But at some point, the United States military has to get out of there because, again, we're the ones who invaded their countries and killed their friends and family, destroyed their infrastructure. How can we be a fair broker there? As long as it's the United States military being the tip of the spear, no good can come of that.
Again, this hour in the exchange, it is our Race for the First series. Every Monday, we're introducing you to one of the candidates in New Hampshire's first congressional district. Right now, it's Democrat Terrence O'Rourke. Send us your questions or comments for Mr. O'Rourke at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook or Twitter is NHPR Exchange. And again, you can watch our interview on Facebook Live today if you'd like. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. So let's talk about veterans issues closer to home, Mr. O'Rourke. As you know, the Manchester VA Medical Center has been under severe scrutiny for, gosh, about a year now after the Boston Globe revealed allegations of substandard care there. As a veteran, was that report a surprise to you?
Unfortunately, it wasn't. The VA Medical Center in Manchester has had a great reputation in the past. My grandfather, that's where he went. He was a disabled veteran of World War II. In fact, he died at the hospital there, but received great care up to that point. What happened at the VA Center in Manchester is what's happening at VA centers all around the country. It's one of these legacy costs of these wars that we didn't anticipate when we went headlong into Afghanistan, headlong into Iraq. What they didn't understand was the type of wars that we were going to be fighting. And what they didn't anticipate were thousands upon thousands of 25, 26-year-old men and women coming home missing limbs, coming home with traumatic brain injury, coming home with PTSD at a level that we've never seen before. So what they did was they were certainly ready to invade these countries, but they weren't ready for the legacy costs afterwards. So what has to happen at the VA, not just in Manchester, but around the country, is we need to fully fund these operations, and we need to get people in there who know how to run hospitals. And I think what we've seen as Veterans Affairs secretaries, both under the Obama administration and the Trump administration, these aren't hospital administrators. And that's what the VA has essentially become. The VA does do a lot of other things. I get that. But the primary focus right now is on providing medical services to our veterans. So I would like to see someone in charge of the VA who knows how to run a hospital system.
Let's turn to several other issues affecting New Hampshire that you would have to deal with if you were the first district congressman, and the opioid crisis, Mr. O'Rourke. Looking at your plan for addressing it, there's a lot of emphasis on law enforcement, going after drug gangs, drug lords, going after doctors who overprescribe. We here on The Exchange have heard from countless people in recovery that we can't law enforcement our way out of this problem. The real emphasis should be on prevention and treatment. So I wonder what you think about the proper balance there.
So here's some of my experience as a prosecutor who deals with this at the ground level. No one's going to recover from these drugs until they come to that decision themselves. You can sentence someone to rehabilitation. You can sentence them to go to a LADAC, a licensed alcohol and drug counselor, until they make that decision to get clean, it's not going to happen. They can lose their family, they can lose their job, they can lose their home. Nothing is going to get them there until they make that decision. So one of my jobs as a prosecutor is essentially to protect society from these folks until they make that decision. But the flip side of that is when those guys make that decision, they want to get clean, there have to be available beds immediately. Because you're not going to get that you may not get that opportunity again. Because if someone says, I want to recover, I want to get clean, and they go to get help and it's not there, where are they going to go? They're going to go right back to the situation they left, and that situation is not a good one. It's a situation where other folks around them are addicted, other people are using. So you may end up only getting one chance to save this person's life. So we need to do that. We need to fully fund. It's got to be 365 days a year, 24 hours. I get that that's expensive. I get it. But at the same time, we don't want to lose an entire generation because we're pinching pennies.
So on the topic of healthcare, which folds into this idea of substance abuse prevention and treatment, you've said, Mr. O'Rourke, that you support Medicare for All as the next logical step in healthcare reform after protecting Obamacare. I believe you've even called for a British-style national health system. Given some of the problems that we've talked about at the VA, some Americans might not be so willing to trust a government-run healthcare system. So how do you make the argument for a government-run healthcare system, given the problems that we've talked about with the Veterans Administration?
I'm a product of government-run healthcare. My dad was in the Army, and I was in the Army, so I grew up receiving government-run healthcare. It works. It's what it does, I think, is it does a lot of things. But one thing I like to talk about from personal experience now, being out of the military and dealing with health insurance, is as a consumer, you don't ever know where you are. You get a bill and you thought this was going to be covered and it wasn't covered. You think your copay is this, but it's really that. And you know, your calendar year might not be the year for your health insurance. So it's confusing and it's very stressful on families. I mean, every time we've had two children recently, and in the bills kind of kept trickling in. So what a single payer or a national health system does is you go to the doctor, you get treated, you go to the pharmacy, you get your medicine, and you walk out. And all that stress and all that concern goes away because there's not going to be bills piling in months and months and years later. You understand exactly what you're going to get up front. So that to me is something no one ever talks about, is how stressful this system of private insurance is to families. I have a family of five, so we're all in that age group where we're still, you know, we have to go to the hospital. We got kids get sick, and every time you think about it, like, well, how many bills am I going to get out of this? And so a national health system takes all that stress away.
So how do you pay for it? That's the next logical question, right? And as you know, Vermont looked at doing this in-state and decided that they couldn't give it a go. It was too expensive.
Yeah, it really couldn't work. I don't think it can work as individual states, because America isn't 50 little countries. It's one country. And how would you control it? Let's say little Vermont went to have universal health care. Well, they can't prevent a bunch of people from moving into Vermont and bankrupting their system. So it has to be done at the national level. And how are you going to do it? Well, you know, you're going to raise taxes. That's how things are done. That's how we pay for things in government. But I don't think people mind paying taxes when they can see a benefit for what they're paying for. When you pay your tax bill and you look and you say, well, I don't see what I get out of this. I don't see what my community is getting out of this. Well, when you're in a country like, say, Britain, and you pay your taxes, you know you're getting the national health out of it. Well, in America, I think people think the same way. You know, I have this right in place. I know I can go to the doctor. I know my family can go to the doctor, and there's not going to be a million bills coming in afterwards. So, again, taxes aren't a bad thing in and of themselves. It's the price we pay to live in a civilized society. I think people see if they get that there's an obvious benefit or an obvious service out of their taxes, they don't mind paying them.
Is that a winning strategy in New Hampshire, Mr. O'Rourke? Maybe if you're running in Massachusetts or Connecticut, but here in New Hampshire, we're pretty tax averse. So, is that a good strategy for you to say, hey, I'm Terrence O'Rourke and I want to raise your taxes?
Well, first of all, I think being honest is always a good strategy. So if you're saying, because most of the candidates in this race, at least on the Democratic side, are saying we want some level of universal health care coverage. Well, of course, that costs money. So if you're saying you're going to be able to pay for it without raising taxes, that's just not being truthful. But where you raise taxes is where the rubber meets the road. And right now we just had these Trump tax cuts that got passed, which once again has shifted the burden of taxes from the 1% down to the rest of us. And if you look at that tax bill, number one, what jumps out is the lowering, once again, lowering the rates on unearned income, once again lowering the rates on corporate taxes, once again lowering the rates on the upper income earners without actually taking away any of the exemptions. So it's not even a true percentage when you look at the bracket. So what I want to do is go back, obviously overturn those Trump tax cuts and start looking again, like let's double that corporate tax rate, let's double the rate on unearned income. So that's how you're going to pay for it.
I want to ask you real quickly, Mr. Work, about guns. As you know, gun rights, gun violence, gun control have emerged as major issues this election year. And as a military veteran, I'm sure you're well-trained and very familiar with guns. So how would you use that expertise to find common ground on this issue?
So, right, not only was I in the military, I've been carrying a gun since I'm 9 years old. I'm a hunter. I'm an outdoorsman. So I understand the value that people have on guns in their lives. But at the same time, I also understand what these weapons of war were designed for. Let's talk specifically about the AR-15 platform. The history of it is clear. It was designed for one thing only, to kill human beings. It's not a sportsman's rifle. It's not used for hunting. It's only made to kill human beings. And that's what it's been used for. And so what I would like to see is a return to the ban that we had on these weapons in the 1990s that unfortunately expired under the W. Bush administration. This doesn't infringe on anyone's Second Amendment rights. We've seen two recent cases, a federal court out in Maryland and a federal court here in the first District Court of Appeals saying, nope, these sorts of bans are fine. They don't infringe on people's Second Amendment rights. So I think that's where you find the common ground, is that you understand that, yes, we're not coming to take away your guns, but these are weapons of war that have no place in a civilized society. Because you've got to understand, when you think about the shooter down in Parkland, he didn't break a single law until he walked in that building and started shooting people. He went to a federally licensed firearm dealer. He passed a background check. He purchased a weapon, not illegally, totally legally. So that's what's really scary, is that these weapons of war are just out there.
Last question for you, Mr. O'Rourke. As I said, you're one of eight Democrats seeking the nomination. U.S. Senator Maggie Hassan recently endorsed fellow candidate Chris Pappas. How do you feel about that?
It doesn't affect me one way or the other. I'm not an establishment candidate. We know that Mr. Pappas is the establishment candidate, and I'm sure he'll be rolling these endorsements out every week, whatever pace he wants to do it. But I think that goes to the point that if you're looking for more of the same, I'm probably not your guy. But if you're looking for someone to go down to D.C. and really take the fight to these people, then that's who you should be voting for, is me.
Well, Mr. O'Rourke, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you a lot for coming in.
Thank you.
That's Terrence O'Rourke. Again, he's Rochester's city attorney, an Army combat veteran, and a candidate for the 1st Congressional District here in New Hampshire. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.